Back in World War II, a singer by the name of Kate Smith made her fame and also the song God Bless America a very well-known song. Kathy Lynn Grossman, in an article in USA Today, said that if she was to sing the same song today, she'd have to sing God's Bless America. And what she was opining on was the idea that we have changed our approach to who we believe God is as a nation to there being a diversity of gods and there being a diversity of beliefs and a diversity of things that are acceptable in the religious realm, but not necessarily acceptable to God because we don't necessarily believe in God singular. And I think she has a point. Americans have become, and my wife and I have observed this over the last few years, how that churches used to designate who they were and who they were affiliated with, such as Presbyterian or Baptist or Methodist, and how many of those over the last few years have dropped their designation as a certain religious denomination and just call themselves the church or the community church or the way, not in the biblical use of the way, but simply designating that they believe in practically nothing. And you can go there and claim your approach to religion. So it reveals that America's drift from clearly defined religious denominations to faiths that are cut to personal preference. Pick the church of your choice means make up the church of your choice and worship God any way you want. There are folks who make up God as they go along and sit side by side with self-proclaimed believers who claim the Christian label but shed any ties to any traditional religious beliefs. Now, I'm not trying to convince you this morning to be a Presbyterian or a Baptist or a Methodist, but I do want you to recognize that people have abandoned any specific beliefs for just any kind of vanilla-flavored religion. And someone has made the comment that we are a designer society. We want everything customized to our personal needs, our clothing, our food, our education, and even our religion. We want it to be our way. And so that's what we do. There is a man by the name of Barna, who actually, his name is George Barna, and he actually operates a defense religious lawyer firm. I was trying to say, figure out how to say that, but he defends attacks on religion, and he'll defend attacks on any kind of religion, but he has had some things to say about his observation about the religious atmosphere in the country over time. And he makes the point that we may end up having, he says we have about 335 million people in the United States, and we may end up with about 335 million different religious beliefs. In other words, everyone designing their religion to suit their own self in their own way. And again, I believe he has a point there. And he makes the point that you know, we have watered down doctrine to the point that people are beginning to just ignore what they see and hear. And it's interesting. He says, everyone hears, and I quote, Jesus is the answer. Embrace him. Say this little sinner's prayer and keep coming back. And if you think about it, he's pretty well nailed it, hasn't he? He said the problem is it doesn't work. It doesn't accomplish anything. People end up bored and burned out and empty because their religion means really nothing to them because it costs them nothing. Now, I'm not going to read all that article, but I think there's some interesting things within it. But another thing that they mention in the article, that she mentions in this article, is she says, she asked the question, can there be Judaism without God? And most say yes. Now, I took a course a few years ago on Judaism, and a renowned Jewish rabbi was teaching the course, and his conclusion is, basically, we are secular Jews, and we're not all that much concerned about religiosity. So she probably nailed it again. Okay? Most say yes. And their reaction to that is, it's incredibly exciting to be Jews without being oppressed or suppressed by the idea of God. I don't know about that. But we do live in an era where you pick and choose the part of religion that makes sense to you. So you take what you like and leave out what you do not. People want the semblance of being religious. They want to be thought of as good. They want to be thought of generally as moral. They even want to be thought of as Christians. But they want it on their own terms, and they don't want it to cost anything in the end. Now, that's not in the article. That's my conclusion from reading the article. And I believe that's very, very true. I want to talk with you this morning a little bit about our religion meaning something to us. And if you want to give a title to it, we might just entitle, I Will Obey When? And that's asked the question, will I obey under certain circumstances? Will my religion mean something to me? In Luke chapter 22, we find that Jesus says in verse 42 to the Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Now, he is in the time of his trial. He's facing imminently the time of his death. He knows how he's going to die. He's known it since before he came into the world. And it's going to be a grueling, terrible, horrible death. And he says, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as my will, but as you will. In other words, I will accept your answer. So, would he obey when it was required? And in verse 44, it tells us that as he was there, that the sweat was like great drops of blood from him. In other words, he's facing this with a great deal of propensity and fear because he's human. And he knows what he's facing. Let this cup pass from me. And yet, he went forward. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7, there we're told, speaking of Christ, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. It's interesting when you read that passage. It says that he offered this up with great crying and tears. We might think of it today as in the sense of begging for this relief. And yet, it says, and he gave it to them who was able to deliver him and to save him from death. And even that he was heard. God didn't turn the Father did not turn a deaf ear to him. He was heard. But you know what he still had to do? He still had to die. He was heard, but he was not delivered from this atrocious death. Someone wrote, following the course of least resistance makes men, as well as rivers, crooked. Pretty good idea. Doing the easy thing is often the dangerous thing to do when we talk about spiritual things. We cannot please God if we always do the easy thing, because obeying God sometimes requires doing the things that are, in fact, difficult things to accomplish. We have to be dedicated and tenacious at getting them accomplished. The test of true and real faith is whether we obey when it's hard to obey. Not when it's easy to obey, but when it's difficult to obey. That's the test of true faith. My wife asked me this morning when coming, she said, what are you going to preach on today? And I said, well, this is what I'm going to preach on. She said, well, here's a good passage for you. And I said, you know, I didn't put it in there. So I'm going to put it in there right now. Jesus said, he who is faithful in little is faithful in much. We can obey when it's easy for us to obey. But that will teach us, if we are willing to do even the little things, then we should be more willing in the times of difficult things. So let's think about, you know, will I obey? Will I be obedient when I'm not in the mood? You ever find yourself in that? This morning I felt really invigorated. I don't know why. I woke up at 3 o'clock. Didn't go back to sleep, so I got up and said, I can get some things done. But I'm not always in that mood. Sometimes I'm just, you know, I might go back to, say, maybe Friday and say, I had a hard time getting going Friday. What about in the mood? It's easy for us to think positive when we're in an upbeat and happy mood. But what about when we're bone weary or we're just sick or discouraged? It's a little harder to pick up and do things then. If we decline to do the right thing when we simply don't feel like it, what kind of commitment to God does that really reflect? We have to pick up and do. In Matthew chapter 5, and I want us to think about this for a second. Matthew chapter 5, verse 46. Do I allow, do I plan ahead for even times when I may not feel like doing it? Or, and think, what will I do under this circumstance? Or do I allow just about anything to interrupt me in doing, you know, my service to God? Just anything that becomes an inconvenience to me in it. To interrupt my worship or my service to God. You know, even sinners do the right thing part of the time. It's when that's more difficult that they don't do the right thing. So we're supposed to, you know, excel above them. There's a couple of passages, and one of them is Matthew 5, verse 46 and 47. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? So, you know, you can treat people to treat you right. In the right way. What about people who treat you wrong? What about people who don't love you? Do you love them in return? Well, it says sinners even do that. And if you salute your brethren only, what do more than you more than others? Do not even the publicans the same? So, you know, do you treat people that you don't know that are not your brethren or are not, you know, not nice to you? Do you treat them in a proper way? And it's kind of easy for us to think about that in times when people are maybe not being courteous or not being nice, or they're rude, or they maybe even incompetent. What is your tendency? How do you react to that? How would you like to be a telemarketer? You know what kind of people you talk to every day? You talk to people who's going to abuse you and misuse you, and maybe you're at the corrections desk, the trouble desk for a company, and everybody calls in is already upset and angry over things. And a little suggestion here, I'll just throw this in on the side. If they didn't take 5 minutes to get to the person you need to talk to by going through all kind of phone menus, you might be a little less irritated when you got there. Okay, but can you imagine what kind of abuse they take? And I hope you don't think I'm just setting myself up as an example. I'm just giving personal experience, though. When I get to the point of finally talking to someone and I'm really frustrated, and even to the point sometimes of being angry about the situation, I stop and think, this person has to deal with an angry person all day long. So maybe I can make their day a little bit better by trying to be kind, even though we got a problem to work at. I wish I would have done that all my life. I wish I would have thought of that, but I try to think of that now. How, put myself in their shoes, how would I want to be treated? And we've got to get this job done. Yeah. The most frustrated person that I usually talk to is the fella or the gal at the electric company when the electric's out. And they're saying, we've already got 394 calls on this. Okay, just making sure. Thank you. When I'm in the mood or not in the mood. In Luke 6, verse 33, if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have you? For sinners also do even the same. There it is. We have to step above. Okay. So, when I said, do we think ahead about when we may not be in the mood, so to speak? We might think in terms, and I realize that I have cherry-picked this passage, and I'm using it out of context, but it makes the point I wanted to make, and that is we need to be instant in season and out of season. We need to be ready when we're ready, and when we're in the mood, and when we're not in the mood. He is really referring to the idea of doing it when people receive it and doing when people do not receive it. Preach the truth in both circumstances. And if it applies, though, to preachers being willing to do that, it should at least the principle apply to us being willing to serve under similar circumstances. Well, what about when it's not convenient? What about when it's not convenient to do what we're to do? There's a governor in the New Testament that makes that point for me, and it's Felix. And Paul is trying to teach him as a governor. You know what he says? And it says he trembled at the word. What Paul had to say to him made him fearful. But you know what he says? Go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for you. Well, it's more convenient for me to listen to God's word or to be obedient to God's word, then I'll call for you. Do you realize a lot of people are like that today? I really need to do something. And I talk to people fairly often. Say, yeah, I really need to get back into this religion thing. I really need to get back into serving God. But I'm not ready yet. They're saying it's not a convenient time yet. It's not convenient to do that. Delaying our obedience till it's easier usually results in never. And when I was making up this point, I began to think about people that I've known over time, and I began to think about childhood companions that I had one of them used to preach, used to do you know, what's called jackleg preaching in West Virginia. He'd go about on Sunday preaching to small congregations, and he just left the Lord. And I've tried to talk with him, and he'd say this excuse or that excuse or another excuse, and one of his excuses, well, you know, he wasn't happy with one of the elders in the church where he attended, and he upset him, and so when that elder dies, when he's not there anymore, I'll be back to serve the Lord. Well, the elder's been dead for 30 years. Yeah. Of course, I knew when he told me that wasn't going to be the case. He doesn't say that anymore. This man doesn't say that anymore. Because he's dead. and he never came back to the Lord. But I have a convenient time. The truth is, the cost of discipleship can be at times quite high. And I don't know that it's really ever really convenient to give up the things that you need to give up, or to add to your life the things you need to add to your life, because it's always going to take an effort to do both. In Matthew 19 and verse 21, Jesus said to the young ruler, he said, "If thou would be perfect, go and sell all that thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." Jesus, what will it take? Well, go sell all you have, give to the poor, and we stop right there sometimes. Do you notice what else Jesus said there? Come and follow me. It said, when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. He could not give up. It was not convenient for him to give up and come and follow Jesus. In Luke chapter 9 and verse 23, you know what Jesus says? Deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. How can we see that as convenient? We have to make drastic changes, aren't we, in our lives? You ever think about, well, I need to do this or I need to do that, but boy, my schedule's so full. I got so many things to do. I don't have time. And I'm not here to accuse us more. I'm just here to remind us and to cause us to think, do we plan to make time for study and worship and good works? Do we plan for that? So we won't. So what's not convenient for me? I have to make time to do that. You know, we don't want to get to the point where the Lord has to make an appointment with us to get anything out of us. We think about it. The real work of the Lord rarely fits into the neat pattern of convenient openings in our life. We have to make time for those things. And when I talk with people about different things, it's amazing to me, especially if you're talking to someone who is fading in faith or spiritually struggling or being distracted from their service to God, and you're trying to encourage them. It's sometimes been amazing to me what all people can come up with. Well, can I come and talk with you about this? Well, my kids got a ball game tonight. One of my kids is in a play, and I've got to go to the play. Or, you know, my children's schedules keep me pretty busy. I'm a soccer mom, and it keeps me busy. And you know, we can just come up with all kinds of things sometimes. And I've even had, it's just too late in the evening to come. The kids have got to go to bed. Sometimes we need maybe just arrive unannounced. Interrupt the schedule. But anyway, one preacher observed, and I quote him, he said, "Significant involvement in the people work, that is the Lord's work, often involves the same kind of disruptions that a new baby brings into a household." Now, if you've got a new baby in the household, you know what that means, don't you? You're going to do things on your schedule or their schedule or as they need. And what he's referring to in the lives of those who preach and teach the gospel is quite often their schedule has to be worked into the convenience and schedules of other people. You can ask my wife. That's why, you know, sometimes the doctor will ask me, or you get this question, "Do you eat at regular times every day?" "No, I eat when I get a chance." And my wife makes food whenever I'm there to do it for, because she doesn't know what time I will be there. How about will I be obedient when I do not understand why God required it? We may not, and I'll just say to you, we often do not comprehend the why of God's will. Now, sometimes we miss the why because we're not paying enough attention, because sometimes He tells us the why. But sometimes God doesn't tell us the why. We don't know the why. He gives us a basic principle that tells us this is good for us, and that's really the why, but we don't understand all the details of that. And there are people that just refuse to obey God if they don't understand, excuse me, the why. If you go through the scriptures, you will find that people of faith have always trusted God enough to obey, even if they didn't get the end from the beginning, or they didn't get the why. For instance, Noah, when God tells him to build an ark, do you realize that Noah had never seen a flood? He may never have even seen rain. God says, build an ark, build this huge boat. It took him 100 years to do it. And he didn't really know why. I mean, God told him what was going to happen, but how could he understand that which he had not seen? And you know what we're told in verse 22 of Genesis chapter 6? And thus did Noah all that God commanded. I did everything. How about Abraham? Genesis chapter 12, God gives him a promise. God tells him to get up and move. Abraham moves. He begins to sojourn. Becomes a vagabond in the earth, so to speak. Genesis chapter 22, whenever he tells him to offer Isaac, can you sit there and tell me that you believe that Abraham understood the why of that situation? We have a hard time explaining the why after the fact. And we have a lot more information. And even Moses. And what we find in each of these examples is that God had a plan, and these all did not necessarily understand. You know what Moses' problem was? He didn't understand why God would choose him. In fact, he had such a lack of understanding that he tried to get out of going just because he didn't think he was the person to do it. And God said, but I have chosen you. Why would God choose Moses? He wasn't eloquent in speech. You might say, well, he might have done better than you think he did. Well, God said, if you don't speak well, I'll just send Aaron. But you're still the man. Why? So that makes me think of things that are simple things that sometimes we may not understand. We may, by diligent study, figure out how something works and still not understand why God chose it. Let me give you a for instance of that. Baptism. Why didn't God choose baptism? Oh, I know we can go and talk about how we put on Christ in baptism and how our sins are remitted in baptism and how we're made a new man and that we die and we're crucified with Christ. We can give you all those passages to tell it, but why did God choose that? What is the why behind that? Jesus said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Why did Jesus choose that? In Acts 22, verse 16, Paul was told, arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins. What are you waiting on, Paul? Do this. Why? Well, that's what God chose. It may be just to see if you have sufficient faith to obey what He told you to do. And what I find is there's a very large majority of people who hear the message who do not have sufficient faith to do what God told them to do here. That's what I find. And make no mistake, rejection of baptism for the remission of sins is a lack of faith. You do not have enough faith to do what God told you to do. Understanding why sometimes can wait, but obedience cannot. So when people say, I'm not going to do it till I understand why, you're in dangerous territory. Now, I'm not saying you follow faith blindly in some way, but there are things that God has told us to do that He has not given us a detailed explanation as to the why. So will I obey when I don't understand why? How about will I obey what I prefer differently? I want to do it some other way. I don't like the way God said to do it. I can remember years ago sitting in a man's house in Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, and we were studying a certain subject, and as we went down through the passage, we hadn't made any comment about the passage. All we did was read the passage. You know what he said? I don't like it this way. I don't know if I've spent another 10 minutes with that man since then. I can't remember. I don't know where he ended up on that subject, but I suspect he did not end up with the truth. Because he said, I don't like that. And sometimes we're like that. Human wisdom, human emotion often interfere with genuine obedience. Most of the time when we refuse to do it God's way, it is because we prefer some other way. We're not happy with what God said. But people of faith, again, have always been willing to submit themselves to the will of God in doing it God's way. And that's what we find in Abraham in Genesis 22. Doing it God's way. Do you think Abraham would have chosen to offer his son? You think he'd have just woke up one morning and said, you know, I think God would be pleased if I offered my son? No. How do you think he felt when God said, offer your only son? You can come close if you think about what if God told you to offer one of your children. He did it God's way. And not only did he do it God's way, but the scriptures infer to us very strongly that he did it willingly. He rose up early in the morning. He took his faith and let it play out to the end. Naaman is an example. It's an example both in the negative and the positive, isn't it? Because Naaman, when he was told to go dip 7 times in the Jordan River, the first thing he does is what? I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it my way. Are not the rivers where I'm from better rivers than the Jordan River? I don't know if he thought it was cleaner, wider, bigger, deeper. I don't know what he thought, but he thought they were better. Let me do it another way. And eventually, one of his servants had the good sense to tell him, you know, if the prophet of God had told you to go conquer a city, you would have went out and done that happily. But all he did was tell you, go dip in a river. And he finally did. And the point being, when he got around to doing it God's way, then he was successful. And then, you know, our prime example as we started our lesson this morning was Jesus doing it God's way. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. I'm going to do it your way. Okay. Will I obey when it would embarrass me? We often use the word hypocrite to describe the worldly person who comes to church on Sunday and morning and pretends to be a godly person, and when they're really not. But that's not the only way hypocrisy is portrayed in the scriptures. it's portrayed in the scriptures as one who pretends not to be a believer in order to avoid the risk of displeasing other people. You ever thought about it that way? We find examples of that in the scripture. For instance, in John chapter 12, the chief rulers there, it says, "Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue." So they believed, but they didn't want anybody to know they believed because they were afraid of the reaction. And it says, "For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." So how often do we acquiesce to someone else's way of doing something because we don't want to displease them or upset them in the way they're doing, that they want it done? We're a society that promotes the idea of, we call it PC, political correctness, and that is, you know, don't do anything or say anything or act in any way that would upset anybody else. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you're going to be a Christian, you're going to be upsetting people most of your life in most of the circumstances you find yourself in. How did that work out for Peter? You know, in Luke chapter 22, we find he does what? He denies the Lord three times. That's not the only time. You know, here he was a man who pretended not to believe because he didn't want to upset the people that were accusing him. He had his focus of attention in the wrong place, didn't he? In Galatians chapter 2, we find another example when it came to the idea of the Judaizing teachers that were promoting the doctrine that we read about and we're studying in Acts chapter 15, that in order to be saved, the Gentiles needed to be circumcised and keep the commandments. Peter knew better than that. But this is what we read. "But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision." So he played the hypocrite, is what he did. He refused to do the right thing because he was embarrassed. And that was a denial of the Lord. And that had to be corrected. Okay? Jesus said what? "Whoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words, I will be ashamed of him." Mark chapter 8, verse 38. So, you know, what application can we make to that? Well, I suppose we can make a long list of applications. And you may think I'm going to go one direction and I may end up going another direction. But here's the direction I'm going to take. When we won't stand up for what we know that we need to do right, we play the hypocrite. So there's lots of application here. But any time that we cave into societal standards because we are embarrassed to buck the trend, we could be guilty of this. So will I be obedient when? Well, the when is whatever circumstance we find ourselves in. And we've mentioned several this morning. Paul was an example of consistent obedience, but it came as a result to him of his self-discipline. And he talks about that in the realm of running a race and keeping himself prepared and remembering to do things and striving for the mastery in things that he did. And he said, that's the way I run my life, or my life as a Christian. And who is the supreme example of consistency in obedience that we find in the scriptures? Paul's a good one, but Jesus is a better one. And he says, whatever faces me, not my will, but your will be done. And in all the things that I've suggested this morning, let me suggest this. Whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, if we just stop and say and mean, not my will, but your will be done. We'll be okay. We'll be fine. We do that. In Hebrews 12, verse 2, I'll give you this passage and then the lesson's yours. Hebrew writer says they're looking unto Jesus. Looking at Jesus. Focusing your attention on Jesus is the idea. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now what's the point? If Jesus could do it, and that's the formula that he used, that's the formula we should use. For the joy that was set before him, there's a joy set before us. Whatever we have to endure, we can despise the shame and sit down with God in heaven. That's the real message. For the joy that's set before us, let us be obedient under whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. Thank you for listening. The lesson's yours.